Hello, welcome to episode 36 of the Exosequential Podcast.
Hi.
Oh, that's Chris you just heard. My name's Mladen. We'll be talking to you about graphic novels, comics, and manga and other pop culture things. It's a weekly podcast. You can check out exosequential.com. There you go.
Wow. Yeah. That was a very quick sales pitch.
I know, I have to be really quick these days.
Why? Did you have to bust a catch or something?
There's a lot of competition in the podcast world, Chris.
People are listening to 8 different podcasts at the same time. We have to stand out.
You know, I used to, like at really? Work, I would line them up.
In a different ear?
Yeah, and then if I lose interest in one, I'm like, I'll switch over to this other one.
Wow.
But on today's very special podcast, we'll be getting the first ever...
Probably.
It depends how quickly I edit this and get it online. First ever review for Rombies number 1, which is a new comic by Sky Ogden and Tom Taylor of...
Gestalt Comics.
Yes. Sky Ogden did Vowels, and Tom Taylor's worked on Star Wars Invasion and among many other good comics.
Correct.
Yes. That's one we'll be talking about, as well as later the first ever Peanuts graphic novel. Now, that's in quotation marks. Chris can see it.
Well, it is a graphic novel.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't need the quotation marks, I would say.
All right. And it's the first one not by Charles Schultz.
But his son co-wrote it.
We'll get into the details. I've got them here. But, that's through Kaboom Studios, which is the children's imprint of Boom Studios.
Correct. You are very informative today. I like it.
I know, right? And it's all off the top of my head. Yeah. As well as our usual what we've been reading segments. And the noose.
The noose. Hang them high. Yeah. Yes, let's talk about the noose.
Yeah, I see you've got a fair few news items there.
Indeed. Green Lantern. Beware my power, Green Lantern's toes. Yes, have you ever had people come back from like China or Singapore or whatever and they have those socks where you can see the individual toes?
Toe socks, my friend.
Is that what they actually called?
I've also seen runners wear particular type of sneakers, which are like toe sneakers.
Toe sneakers?
Yeah.
That would be uncomfortable, I would have thought. No. Green Lantern, you can see his individual toes. This is the first time this week. 3 full high-res images, full body... what am I talking about, Mladen? Help me out here.
They're full body promotional stills of Ryan Reynolds in the Green Lantern costume.
Correct. The movie opens June, I think it is, June 17. So this is the first time of the year we see his full body striking various poses, heroically so. He doesn't have boots as such because the whole costume is kind of a body glove constructed by his green ring. And you can see his individual toes on the costume, and it looks...
Does that bother you?
A bit weird. It does look weird, I must say. It's not as bad as perhaps the bat nipples.
Okay.
Joel Schumacher's movies. Remember that? Yeah. They had individual nipples on the Batman costumes.
I get you.
But it is a bit odd. But I kind of see why they've chosen it's more of a sci-fi, sinewy, glowing costume rather than a actual superhero costume.
So it helps separate it from other superhero films as well.
Yeah, and it puts it more into the sci-fi realm. So, but yeah, the toes and the domino mask and Ryan Reynolds' face still haven't sold me. But us comic book fans, we, as you gathered by now, we're very particular and petty.
Bitching. Yeah. So much bitching.
The comments are quite humorous. People are very passionate about these things.
I may be the only comic fan who might bitch about this, but he has no genitals.
I was thinking, look, we can see the detail of his individual toes, so we should be thankful they can't see anything else.
So if this is a costume from his imagination, in his imagination, he has no genitals, he's a Ken doll, basically.
He's a Ken doll. He's a green Ken doll. Fighting for the universe.
In a sinewy bathing suit. Anyway, it doesn't look... I don't hate it. I think it looks fine.
That's the nicest thing we have to say. Once we see it in action... perhaps it might look better.
Speaking of seeing things in action.
Oh, Batman?
Yes.
Wow.
Batman.
Yeah, you might have noticed a while ago, probably a couple of months ago, we announced, we didn't announce it. We talked about the Batman Live Arena Tour, which is starting in Manchester in England in July. Basically, it's like a spectacular stage show with Batman and Robin, and basically it centres on Dick Grayson, the first Robin, his tail as an acrobat and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And so we know Riddler, Penguin, Catwoman, Joker, all these characters are in it, and there's no singing, there's no dancing, but it's basically an origin tale. Alan Heiberg, I believe, helped co-write it, who's a comics writer. They released the first videos at a press release and the first pictures of the actors assembled in their rather interesting costumes. At first glance, I thought, hey, that looks pretty good. But then, yeah, Batman and Robin do look very Joel Schumacher-like. You know, they look like from the late 90s movies.
Very silvery. Very shiny. I guess Robin looks a bit more like...
Robin's got the costume of the third Robin, Tim Drake, rather than the first Robin, Dick Grayson.
Well, they've definitely gone for the more modern-looking costumes, especially with Catwoman.
Catwoman's got an all-black one-piece with the little mousey things
and goggle
her goggles. And Harley Quinn's costume, Harley Quinn, who's Joker's girlfriend, his former psychiatrist, looks quite different. She's, from a red and purple colour scheme.
Yeah.
But it still works.
Yeah. I guess I don't want to be critiquing the fashion, but the way they've presented this thing is like a fashion show, so there isn't a whole lot else we can do. You can check it out on Bleeding Cool.
Yes, there's videos which have to be seen, but Joker is the MC of the evening, and he looks... He's trying to put like on the Mark Hamill voice. Mark Hamill, who played Luke Skywalker, did the voice of Joker in the Batman animated series in the 90s. And he's kind of MCs this event towards the press. So Batman and Robin come running up and jump over a couple of steps in a formative display of acrobatic ability. And then the highlight...
3, 2, 1, confetti!
Confetti comes down and they strike poses. After all that, I can only assume it is for the kids. But then Poison Ivy walks out and she looks like a stripper.
Yeah, she's doing a bit of a little kinky thing.
I suppose
thing.
Maybe that's for the parent, the adult parents.
The poor parents who've been dragged along to this atrocious monstrosity of a stage show. If it was, I'd almost forgive it if it was a musical. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's got that kind of lavish look about it.
But I've seen better shows that cosplayers usually, when they do a parade of their clothes, they'll do like a little act or something, And this is exactly what it seems like. And they're fine-looking costumes, but cosplayers do as well, so you've got to have better than just a good-looking costume.
That's a good point. You've got to raise the stakes, don't you? Because, every comic convention has cosplayers in them now, and they just blow the water out of a lot of this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I think little kids will like it, and they go, "Yay, Batman! Yay, confetti!"
Kids don't have a lot of standards, really.
Who's got a hammer? Is that Harley? She's got a hammer?
Yeah.
A big mallet.
No, she had a mallet in the old cartoon.
Did she? I remember. Okay.
Anyway, this comes out in July in, Manchester?
Manchester, England.
And then the world, I assume.
Hopefully. I'm going to take my nephew to it because he's a big superhero fan.
You just want an excuse to go for yourself.
I do, but that's a good one. No. Dear. Let's switch to another DC superhero. Superman. New film directed by Zack Snyder, Sucker Punch.
Schneider.
And the Owls movie.
That, yeah.
The Guardians of Gahooly or whatever. Gang gang Gahooly, hooly hooly. What's he? Gang gang Gahooly. He's directing Man of Steel. Has it now got an official name? It's not called Superman, Man of Steel or Superman Begins.
They'll change it again. It'll be Superman .. the prelude .. Man of Steel. Superman Origins, sorry.
Maybe. Yeah. And Diane Lane has revealed that it will show Superman's from infancy to current age, so whether there's flashbacks or whether it's yet another origin story.
Why do they waste our time with
roll
this?
Roll your eyes. I don't know. It's what's my most famous superhero, so you think we don't need another origin. General Zod is in it. General Zod is an old Kryptonian villain. Most of you remember him from Terrence Stamp days. Neo before Zod. Terrence Stamp played him awesomely in the Superman film. So actor Michael Shannon has been cast as him, and he has been in
Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire, which is yet to come to Australia, I believe.
Yeah, Bad Boys 2, I believe, we just saw on the IMDb, and that's good enough.
Bug, and he was in The Runaways.
Yeah, that's right.
Recently. So from what I've seen, he plays this kind of creepy, confident kind of guy, so it'll be interesting to see him play General Zod, who's quite a charismatic villain, so...
Are you just saying creepy confident because he's like a weird-looking guy?
He is a weird-looking guy. You've got to admit that.
But he's working it. Like,
he is a very good actor.
He's Steve Buscemi-ing it up, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He's been awesome in everything I've seen him in, so that hopefully he's not a better actor than Henry Cavill or Superman.
Or Amy Adams is. You know, Amy Adams was in Smallville.
Was she?
Yeah, she played the obesity vampire.
Was she was a fat vampire, or she sucked the blood of fatties?
She was basically like that Stephen King novel Thinner, she just kept losing weight, so she kept eating, and then she ate other people.
Oh, okay.
This back in first season of Smallville before she was famous.
It surprises me that you know that. Did you research this recently?
I think it was on IO9 or AV Club.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Websites.
Yes. It's worth knowing.
Apparently.
Well, yeah. It's a second foray into the world of Superman, so of course it's worth knowing.
That is true.
Yeah. Better role this time, though. Got to say, obesity vampire doesn't look great on your resume.
Intrepid reporter is much more
Yeah. What else we got?
That's it.
All right.
Well, all DC superheroes, Green Lantern, Batman, and Superman.
God. Is there any Marvel movie news or anything?
Thor's coming out. Captain America may or may... The sequel of Captain America may or may not be set in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all we know. But Thor is out.
Why not?
This week.
But I was going to say... Since us Australians get to see Thor before Americans do.
Awesome, really?
Yeah, it comes out, I think, a week earlier for us. It seems to be part of their method to tackle the international piracy.
Ah, okay.
Which sounds more awesome than it is.
Australians don't know how to burn DVDs.
I think they want better international ticket sales. Oh, so, you know, us Australians, if we have to wait more than a week for something, torrent it up, you know. So they're trying to combat that.
I'm sure America would be more rampant than us because they have free broadband, don't they?
Yeah, maybe they're dumber. I don't know.
Sorry, Americans.
No, you're all fine. That's just...
we don't support piracy here.
A little joke.
But if you do watch Thor, stay for after the end credits because one can only assume, as in has there'll been be the case crap. Of the other Marvel movies, there'll be some glorious cameo at the end of it.
Will it be glorious or will it be like, oh, there's a shield in the background?
Well, the Avengers is coming out, next year, isn't it? Or the year after? So they've got to ramp up these cameos.
Next year, wow, yeah.
Is it? I think so, yeah. Because Thor and Captain America this year, then there's Avengers, then there's Iron Man 2, and Thor 2, Captain America 2, and all that.
And that's by, Joss Whedon?
He is directing
it. Josh or Joss?
Joss, J-O-S-S.
Yeah, okay.
Director of, creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Firefly.
You know, he'd love that Green Lantern costume, because apparently he has a foot fetish.
Oh, okay.
And this is just internet speculation, but most of his characters walk around barefoot all the time.
Yeah.
And he has like long shots of Summer Glau's feet in Firefly and stuff. Anyway, so he's probably like, oh, I love this costume. I have no idea what Joss Whedon sounds like. I love this costume.
Or that. <Well,
like. laughs> In actual comic book news, and we're going to stray away from films for a moment here.
Sure.
Chris informed me of this morning, and I find it quite sad. Tokyopop, which for 15 years has been publishing manga in the West in translated versions. Lots of good titles on there. In recent years, they've not had the best run winning the popular licenses. They've gone more to Viz and Dark Horse and et cetera. And they've had to combat the internet, sharing and so forth. And they've just announced that they'll be closing their North American publishing operations as of May this year. So it's the end of another publisher, which is always kind of sad news to report.
Yeah, apparently the German office will remain open just to deal with, TV and film licensing rights and that sort of thing. But, yeah, it is. It is sad. I guess, I don't know, will some other kind of publisher fill the void that they're not able to fill anymore? Who knows? I know Dark Horse have recently laid off a few different editors and whatnot as well, but they've also, at the same time, a couple of days later after they announced their layoffs, announced their new digital... digital distribution kind of deal, so you can get Dark Horse digital comics online now. So it's quite telling things to come. I guess a lot of the American publishers see digital as a way of the future. So I don't know if Tokyopop sees the same thing. I suppose it would be a variety of factors. But yeah, it is sad, really. Think about all those people losing their jobs, which is never a good thing.
Yeah. The Stu Levy, who's the company CEO, he's just released a short little press release, and I just want to read a little part of it. Together, our community has fought the good fight, and as a result, the manga revolution has been won. Manga has become a ubiquitous part of global pop culture. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished, and the incredible group of passionate fans we've served along the way. My fellow revolutionaries. So it's a bit sad. I've just found some titles here. They used to put out Sailor Moon, which is an obvious one. They've also, I remember, Dragon Head, which is a little known, but one of my fave mangas. Parasite, Ice Blade, a whole bunch of stuff. And they've always kind of gone to the effort of putting out stuff which is not well known.
Yep.
So I've always kind of appreciated them, and it's sad to see them go.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, that's a downer.
Good one, my lad.
Chris, what have you been reading this week?
Well, I've been reading a couple of comics which we'll quote the dialogue from later in the show.
Oh, God.
It's pretty good. You'll love it.
Really?
You can be the woman.
No.
And last week I read Brightest Day 23, which is the DC bi-weekly series that has been all about the Green Lanterns coming back and people coming back from the dead and all that kind of stuff by Geoff Johns and Peter Tomasi, with art by Ivan Rice, Joe Pardo, Norman Rapland, Oakley Albin, and a whole bunch of other people. But like every issue, the visual style is consistent. This is a pretty important, and it's the penultimate issue of Brightest Day, I believe. Firestorm and Green Arrow are stuck in the Star City Forest, and the only place with blue skies, and because natural disasters are happening all around the world, and the Star City, which is the home of Green Arrow Forest, is the only safe place, but it's surrounded by this invisible force field, so all these helpless people trying to avert the earthquakes and stuff can't get in and get rescued. Deadman talks to Firestorm and says that the White Ring made him kill Hawkman and Hawkgirl and Aquaman and changed Martian Manhunter. Then a huge Black Lantern version of Swamp Thing shows up.
What?
Yes, you heard me. I thought you'd like that. Then the white ring.
No, I don't.
then the white ring on Deadman transforms Firestorm into a fire elemental.
Okay.
Transforms Aquaman into a water elemental. Transforms Hawkman and Hawkgirl into air elementals, and Martian Manhunter into earth. Then they
Who has heart?
Then they all attack the evil, huge Swamp Thing. And then a tree in the forest that has the symbol of the White Lantern burned into it starts glowing and sprouts the body of Alec Holland.
Yeah.
From its roots, saying that he is the Earth's savior. Alec Holland is the alter ego, I guess.
Yeah,
the host of Swamp
Thing. It's complicated. It's okay. He's kind of, they merged their personalities during Alan Moore's run. So they've made him a villain.
Initially it seems that way. A huge black version, so like a zombie version of Swamp Thing. I think there was a Swamp Thing TV series back in the... I think Heather Locklear was in it, wasn't he?
What? Really?
Yeah. Was that Man Thing? No, I think it was Swamp Thing.
Hmm.
So there's only two issues to go of this series. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of buzz on the internet because Swamp Thing hasn't been seen in, years. And now that Vertigo is kind of changing, it looks like he'll be a part of the DC Universe proper.
Yeah, I think he was originally put out on the DC imprint, him and obviously Constantine. So it makes sense that he used to cross over with Batman all the time. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go. If you like Swamp Thing, Brightest Day 23 is not a bad issue to pick up. And it'll probably, for those collectors out there, it might even be worth something, but not a lot, one day.
Mm. Speaking just on the collectors thing, remember we reviewed Non-Player a couple of weeks ago?
Yep.
That now is a hot ticket item. It's gone upwards of, say, I think around 20 Australian on eBay and so forth.
Wow.
So I think it's a $4 comic, so it's doing all right so far. I think,
nice.
Clearly our influence has meant this comic
is
shot to start.
It was only worth $19.80 before we said something about it.
20 cents over, how many comic issues do you reckon something like that would sell?
100,000
maybe?
Yeah, maybe 100,000.
Yeah. That would be lucky, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they are doing a second print run.
Mm, not
so
surprised.
If you've missed out, you'll be able to pick one up. I think it's mid-May. Marvel, every year Marvel and DC do a big summer event, Marvel's version this time is called Fear Itself. It's a 7-issue miniseries. The last one they had was called Siege, about Asgard, Thor's home, floating in the sky, invading Earth. This one is called Fear Itself. It's written by Matt Fraction, who does Iron Man, with art by Stuart Immonen, who does Next Wave, who we talked about last week.
Right.
And Ultimate X-Men and a bunch of other stuff. It opens with Steve Rogers, who's the former Captain America, and Sharon Carter in between two opposing people, crowds over what it looks like Ground Zero in Manhattan, 9/11, the towers. So they don't say it's the Twin Towers, but that's kind of the implication. And then there's two opposing forces, they turn into a riot. Then it cuts to Antarctica with Sin, who is the daughter of Red Skull, the Nazi bad guy, played by Hugo Weaving in the film, the red face guy, black jacket and all that.
Don't be racist. They're called Native Americans.
What?
Red-faced guy.
Oh, right, yes. Red Skull's daughter, Sin, is leading a team to a Nazi fortress with soldiers that have been trapped there since 1942. So in the snow, she finds what she's been looking for, and it's a hammer, kind of like Thor's, but it's frozen in ice. And she believes that she's the only person who can lift it because she's had a dream. And I'm going to quote this. I was the queen of the world. I killed Captain America with a hammer. And they made me the queen of the world. And everyone was afraid. So she lifts it, and then we learn that it's the hammer of Skadi, S-K-A-D-I. She gets a different costume, and then she wants to resurrect her dear old dad, Red Skull, next, as he's been dead for a while. Tony Stark, then we see Tony Stark. He wants to rebuild Asgard after its destruction in the Siege miniseries, and holds a press conference to declare that he's going to do so in the small town of Broxton, which is this Midwest town, giving jobs and hope to the people there. Thor goes to Odin, his dad, for his approval. Like, you know, that's. But Odin's like, I don't want to. We're gods. We shouldn't have to integrate with these petty human things.
And their press conferences. Does Thor hold a press conference? Just because Tony Stark has a press conference every 5 minutes, it seems.
He does. He's got a lot to say. But yeah, Odin doesn't want the gods and man to be living together. And he knows that a prophecy is about to happen, ending the world. So they have a bit of a fight. And then Odin takes all his children, all the other Norse gods, back home to Asgard in space. And they leave all Earth all alone. So Thor is by his lonesome. And then Sin, Red Skull's daughter.
Oh, this is like spoiler heavy. You're like telling the whole plot.
I know. Sin, kind of, or Skadi, because she's been transformed since she lifted the hammer, meets her father, not Red Skull, but the father of the hammer person or whatever. And then he sends 7 meteors to Earth, which may have almost finished, which make all of the Earth fear them. And then, so it's all set up, but basically what it's using fear as a story element, so fear itself. So fear is the driving force of this comic, and all the gods and the of stuff from days of old are going to come. So it looks like Thor is going to be pretty integral to this. And I should point out that Captain America, Steve Rogers, because he passed the Captain America mantle to Bucky, his former, who became the Winter Soldier.
Yep.
So, but now because the film's coming out, Steve Rogers is going to be Captain America once more, so people can go to the comic shop and see Captain America as Steve Rogers, just like in the film. So I don't know what Bucky, who's the current Captain America in a different costume, I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, who cares?
It's tough out there.
No love for sidekicks.
Former sidekick. Yeah. So, so that's Brightest Day, Fear Itself. Pretty good comics and a bunch of other stuff that I've read, but those are the main ones.
Okay. This week I did dip into Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
I won't go into any detail on this episode because I want Chris to give it a reread and then we can discuss it next week. But I won't even summarize my opinion. Suffice it to say, it's kind of everything I hate about superhero comics, but it's also kind of entertaining. So I'll get into why.
Kingdom Come is an old DC miniseries about future set superheroes.
It's not that old anymore, is it?
96, I think, 97.
96, yeah. So, yeah, 96 by Alex Ross and some dude.
Mark Waid.
There you go. And besides that, I have been playing Batman Arkham Asylum.
Arkham. Where pigs invade the Ark.
And I've got it on PC, I should say. And I've got to say, it's actually really good. And there's a lot in it for Batman fans.
Yep.
In that it pays off on a lot of characters, which are just... You wouldn't really know unless if you follow the comics quite a bit. There's all little hidden things you can find throughout the game. Riddler hides things
boxes
around,
yep,
and it unlocks all sorts of little neat things. So there's just a lot of game content in there. And, I mean, I won't get into the plot, but you've got up against Bane, Joker, Poison Ivy, which is very cool, Scarecrow, which are very entertaining levels because they really go all out on the nightmare stuff. And, I won't spoil the ending, but Venom comes into... Not the Spider-Man Venom, but the Toxin Venom.
Yes.
Yeah, comes into play. And it's a very entertaining showdown right at the end. So if you haven't played it, because Arkham City, the sequel, is going to be coming out, and that's going to have Hugo Strange and so forth.
Yes.
And Two-Face, finally, and Catwoman. That's going to be coming out soon, so it's a good time to grab Arkham Asylum for cheap.
Yeah.
Through Steam or through your local video game store. And, Steam is legal. Do you use Steam at all?
No, but when I went and bought Crisis 2, the guy behind the counter was telling me about it.
Mm. It's just basically an online video game platform where you can buy games from without having to pay for boxes and things, so you pay slightly less.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's like it updates the games and gives you like the patches and so forth if there's anything wrong with them,
which
usually there is.
Okay.
Games crash a lot these days, but it's a really beautiful looking game. Lots of very, very detailed, and they really make you feel like Batman as a detective.
Yes,
because there's always detective-y things you have to do And there's like a predator. You basically have like a predator vision.
Yes.
So you can see people's
thermal.
Yeah, yeah.
You
it's
can
like
see people's
skeletons.
Thermals.
So it's very entertaining. Anyway, very cool game, and I've been playing that.
Yes, because Batman has. Well, it's been a long time coming for Batman to have a good video game. This is the only good one he's ever had. So,
and if they keep making them like this, I can see this being a very popular game franchise. I think this one did really well.
It did, yeah.
And among people who aren't fans. And what I loved was, did I lend you that Arkham Asylum Living Hell?
Yes, I read that. It's good. Yeah,
not the Dave McKean one, the...
The one with the accountant or whatever goes into Arkham and gets...
it becomes Great White Shark.
Great White Shark.
And they made up all these villains for it, which seemed like they've been villains for decades, which I thought was really effective.
Yes.
And they pay off a lot of the stuff in that comic as well, like the guard who gets his hand bitten off by Croc plays a recurring role and so forth.
Yep.
So there's a lot in there for people who are like, oh, I know that comic. And
The people from the comic are in the game?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A lot of them. The guard is like...
Yep.
And then you unlock character bios and things and you see other versions of recognisable things.
Humpty Dumpty is one, isn't he?
Yes.
He's the big fat bald guy that sews things together.
Yeah.
Pretty creepy.
He means well, but he can't put things back together again.
Yeah.
That's his thing. And that's from Living Hell, but that one's kind of a tongue-in-cheek take on Batman villains.
Yes.
In that they're all kind of weird and... just like oddballs, and not a little bit terrifying, but also funny. So yeah, that's a good comic to check out. Actually, it's by Dan Slott. That's the writer.
Oh, Dan Slott. Yeah, I thought Dance a Lot. What?
Dance a Lot.
Yes.
What?
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my thin reading list this week. I think we should get into our feature reviews.
I was listening, actually, to Tron Legacy Revisited. I did want to mention
that. Wait,
what
is that?
Tron Legacy Revisited. It's basically remixes of the Tron Legacy soundtrack by Daft Punk. So it's got 15 tracks in it by people that I haven't heard of, but you would have.
Is there a list that you've got?
The Crystal Method.
Yeah.
Well, most of these I've heard. The Crystal Method, Moby, Tame Impala, is that how you say it?
Tame Impala?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Paul Oakenfold. Sander Kleinenberg.
Okay, this list
Cascade,
is...
Cascade, the Japanese pop stars.
This is like a list from a 90s remix album, by the way. Like, it's... I haven't heard of anything good from a lot of these artists, but Tame Impala are a Perth group.
Okay.
Who are just on the cusp of breaking it really, really big. And kudos to them, because they've been doing some good work. And they're kind of like an indie rock group.
Yep. It's a good album. I love the original Daft Punk soundtrack, but this is just remixes, and they haven't used all the songs. There's 15 tracks, but it's really good. I like it. I'm getting into this kind of music.
Very good.
So there you go. It's just been released. It's got green cover. Ask for it at your local read.
What's that album with the green cover?
Actually,
I
it's
heard
a black
it's
cover, but green font text on it.
That could be many things. Anyway, yeah, that one. Tron Revisited. Get it.
Yep.
We're now seeing the return of a feature which we abandoned, 20 weeks ago or something?
And I don't think we abandoned, we just forgot.
Forgot we were doing it. And I don't know why, it was vaguely entertaining.
Panel plays or something?
Panel plays.
Something like that.
So
what we did, we take a famous comic and kind of read some dialogue on it, but we're not doing a famous comic, but we're doing comics that have been released this week. So we'll just read out the dialogue.
Okay.
And I will... mention afterwards.
You'll tell me who these characters
straight away
are and what's going on.
What's going on.
Alright.
You start.
Okay. Oh,
let's
do
see,
I?
See.
Oh, okay. Go home.
Oh, boy. I've had plenty of experience with the multiverse.
You need a reality check, Flash. How come you're so ready to believe that this guy is really from a parallel? Well, what's that?
It's a hair follicle from Hot Pursuit. I got it when he took off his helmet.
And you moved so fast, he couldn't see you? Cool!
I'm as skeptical as you are, Bart, but not as impatient. I'm going to the lab to do a DNA test to see if at least the doppelganger part of Hot Pursuit's story is true.
I'll come with you!
No, you won't.
Well, what can I do then?
Nothing. I can handle this.
Maybe you don't need to do the DNA test. You're sounding exactly like Hot Pursuit.
It's better if I handle this alone.
Wait a second. Did you not come to the picnic because of me?
It's actually quite a touching scene, but... Malad interpreted things differently. That is from The Flash number 10,
mm-hmm.
written by Jeff Johns with the great art by Francis Manapul. And it's too complicated to explain, but I was playing the recently returned from the dead Flash, Barry Allen. And you were playing Kid Flash, also known as Impulse at one stage, Bart Allen, and you're my nephew from the future.
Tiny Flash.
And their fellow Hot Pursuit is their motorcycle from the future, who's an alternate version of Barry Allen, who I was playing. It's actually a pretty good comic. The art's awesome, and it's cool kind of tying into Flashpoint, which is the new DC miniseries where a whole bunch of weird stuff is happening, like Aquaman is Emperor of the World and all cool kinds of shenanigans.
Aquaman gets a bad rap, don't you think?
My name's Aquaman. I'm here to say
that is a bad rap. Anyway, let's do our feature reviews.
I like it.
All right, now on to our feature reviews. That's where Chris and I actually decide to read the same thing that week.
Yay!
Yeah, I know, right? Rather than just talking over each other and the other things you fans have gotten used to. Chris is just taking a sip of his
mocha caramel latte.
Is there any coffee in it?
Yes, a mocha caramel latte is a coffee.
It just sounds like sugar and milk.
Well, I've started to drink low-fat milk in my
that's good
caffeinated beverages.
I've switched to high-low and skim milk and all that. It's
I actually lost half a kilo in the last few days, and I even had to go in a further notch in my belt. I'm wasting away.
Yeah.
I'm a shadow of
you're
the man
disappearing
I once was.
Right in front of me.
Yep.
Soon you'll be like, what, dead man or something? Just skin and bone.
Correct.
Yeah. Anyway, this has got nothing to do with superheroes. We'll be reviewing the, I guess what they're calling the first ever Peanuts graphic novel.
Yep.
And it's called Happiness is a Warm Blanket, Charlie Brown. Now, this is from Kaboom. This is their first comic on the... They've just won the license. Boom Studios, I should say. They've just got the license to put out new Peanuts comic material.
Yep.
Now, this is an 85-page book. It's an adaptation of a recently produced animated special of the same name, and that was based on Schultz's strips. So,
yes,
it's kind of a cover. So,
yeah, it's not a brand new story and stuff, but yeah, like you said, it's got Schultz's strips, and it's kind of and his son is one of the people that co-wrote it. So it's got that kind of consistent feel. And I've never been a big Peanuts fan. I'm guessing you probably have been more than me.
Yep.
Peanuts is, yeah, as Malaysia, Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Woodstock. That's Peanuts.
Manic depression. Obsessive compulsives. You know. Yeah, Lucy's psychiatrist booth. 25 cents.
Yes. Really. So, yeah, it was pretty consistent. I mean, I was glad they kept the visual style the same from what I remember. Mostly I remember them from the animated films.
Yeah.
Apparently the last film was made like 5 years ago, but I don't know what it was called.
Oh, really? Okay.
They
must keep making them like the Scooby-Doo cartoons, you see, that still come out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as you said, it was co-scripted by Charles Schultz. What is it?
Craig.
Craig Schultz.
Written by Craig, son of Charles Schultz.
Son, that's what I was going to say.
And Stephen Patz. Pastis.
Who is a cartoonist for Pearls Before Swine.
Correct.
Which I've never read.
No, but I think that's another long-running kind of series. Art is by Paige Braddock, Andy Bell, or Del Bell?
Yeah.
And Bob and Vicky Scott. Yeah. But, as I said, even though there's that many different artists on it, it does have the same kind of crude, simple style. Like, it's not like this isn't
crude?
Crude, but in a good way.
Crude?
Like, yeah.
No way. I wouldn't call it crude.
I don't mean to be nasty, but it's simple.
Oh, like, it's on.
It's a simple style. It's not like highly. It's not Jim Lee. It's cartoonish.
It's cartoonish,
and it's yeah.
Okay. Well, in this one, yeah, between these three artists, they've done a fairly good job of approximating Schultz's style, specifically of. I guess more of the 60s, 70s period,
yep.
Rather than the more the most recent ones he'd been doing. And through it, I guess it sort of puts like a different spin on some familiar gags, because some of them I do vaguely remember from the comics.
Okay.
Snoopy continuously trying to get steal Linus's blanket from him.
Yep.
And obviously, Lucy. Yeah, hitting
Lucy's
on...
The girl with the black hair, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. Lucy hitting on Schroeder.
The pianist. Who has the Beethoven bust.
Yeah, that's right. And the way this is set up, it's That's why I hesitated calling it a graphic novel, because every page is set up as a gag. So it almost reads like... his old strips would set up like a longer storyline as well, several months of like this of the cartoon. So, and this sort of follows in that tradition. So there's like a punchline on every page, or two punchlines on every page.
Yep.
But they experiment more with like the layouts and like extreme close-ups.
It's not just a familiar, you know, 6-panel or 9-panel grid on the pages. As you said, there's like full page panels where Snoopy's running around. There's one where Charlie's flying a kite. He gets tangled up in some trees, and so there's like half page, full page panels like that. The colouring's very simple, but thankfully it's a style that Peanuts purist will be familiar with. This isn't like a CGI Garfield kind of approach to things. But I actually found this quite charming. The whole story is Lucy, who's Linus's sister, who I didn't realise. Their grandma's coming, so she's trying to get rid of him to get rid of his blue blanket, which is like his security blanket that he's. Mm-hmm. That character is famous for having. So they keep trying to kind of wean him off it.
Right.
Like I said, it tells a larger story, but each page or a couple of pages tells a joke or so.
Yeah,
so,
and there's little asides to the other characters doing their own thing. And so.
Yeah, that's right. So there's bits where Linus is stressing when the thing's in the washing machine and he's kind of, the blanket's in the washing machine. There's one where, Snoopy attacks it and kind of runs away with it. There's one where they substitute a tea towel for his blanket to kind of take that off him. Mm. There's one where Lucy turns his blanket into a kite.
Yeah.
And it gets lost in the ocean, and the Coast Guard find it and mail it back to him, and all this kind of stuff. It was actually, I must admit, more amusing and enjoyable than I expected it to be. I kind of because I'm not that familiar with these characters. I thought, this will just be a bit kiddie, but it was actually quite witty, and the pacing was well done for the humour. So I actually quite enjoyed this. I must say, I'm surprised that I did. I wasn't expecting to, but it's just a simple story, and it never came across as cheesy or outdated. It's got a kind of modern feel to the story and the jokes, I felt.
Right.
You know, it's not like, gee, golly, gosh, you know, it's actually...
Well, Schultz always had a bit of a sharper wit, I found, than a lot of other newspaper cartoonists, particularly in that he gave everyone kind of motivations for doing things. They weren't just one-dimensional gag characters. Usually, I mean, Charlie Brown has near-crippling depression through most of the comic, and Linus is just a nutcase with the blanket thing. And I like how, kids do have these obsessions that... he gave every character kind of their own weird obsession that was kind of fully realized through the comic, and then he used that for best comic effect, obviously. And in this case, I mean, as you mentioned, a lot of the jokes are straight from Schultz's sort of original comics, but they are represented here in a slightly different form, maybe a slightly more updated. Well, it looks like the old comics, except there's more, more of a dynamic approach to the choice selection of shots, the panel arrangements and so forth. So it's quite very readable in that regard, and you can sit down and just read through the whole thing. And it's obvious, it's a book you can dip into as well, because it's you don't have to read the whole thing all the way through.
No, but I did. And I liked it. And there's a 7-8 page behind the scenes thing at the end.
That was good.
Which has like sketches and storyboards for the animated film that this is based upon of the same. That was pretty interesting as well. Mm. I think if you're a fan of Peanuts, if you grew up and you're going to miss the strip, you'd be a fool not to get this.
Yeah, it seems very faithful to that. So if you're worried about it being a... No,
Charlie Brown's not going to start wearing his hat backwards and...
Yeah, it's not
start
like
using an iPhone.
That's a potential worry. Oh man, you just put the fear of God into me. Do not fear, folks. It's very readable, and that'll be coming out.
This is out now, I think the film hasn't been released as yet.
Right,
but it's interesting that there's no adults in it.
There never
were. It's a whole story with kids, and I do remember from the wah 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 that when the teachers would talk.
Yeah.
You know.
The horns, like, wap, wap. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that's a great thing about Peanuts.
it's just a bunch of kids kind of running the show, which is pretty cool.
And a bird and a dog. And all the dog's cousins.
His dog's cousins?
Really? Yeah, he has, like, Joe Cool and... Oh, never mind.
Oh, no, isn't Joe Cool Snoopy's alter ego?
No, I don't remember if it was his alter ego or if it was his cousin.
Oh, okay.
He had cousins, though.
All right.
You might be right. It might be an alter ego. Red Baron was an alter ego. That was a good one.
Okay.
Anyway, that's enough about Peanuts. That's Happiness is a Warm Blanket, Charlie Brown. Good one for reading with your kids as well, I would say.
That's true.
Yeah. The other comic, and this is a world-exclusive premiere review. Hyping it up, Milan. This is number one of Rumbies, which is not the debut, because they had an issue zero that came out.
They did have an issue zero that came out late last year, which was, I believe, from memory, a black and white one-shot. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't read that zero issue, I recommend you do, but it's not necessary to have read this.
Right.
Rumbies is Roman zombies, so zombies in the Roman era. And it's by Perth Publisher, which is where we are based.
Right.
Gestalt Publishing. And it's basically, as I said, so this is the first issue of an ongoing series, and it's going to be telling zombies through different historical periods.
Right.
This blew me away, Maladdin, I must say.
Ooh.
I was very impressed. And, I always like to support local artists.
Right.
And local publishers, even if I think it's crummy, I'll still buy it. I feel, look at these guys, they're giving it a shot, I should support them. Gestalt have always put out good stuff, and they've always put out daring kind of stuff, like not middle of the road stuff, but they've been quite, from like the Flinch anthology to
they've done work with Sean Tan.
Always good stuff. So, this is Rumbies number one, ongoing series. It's a full colour.
Mm. Is this their first ongoing series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So written by Tom Taylor, who we mentioned in the intro, has done a fair bit of stuff with Dark Horse, mostly in their Star Wars license.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got something for DC in the books as well, but I don't believe he's announced it as yet.
And he's a professional playwright, and he wrote a comic book adaptation of one of his plays called The Example.
Correct, which is awesome.
Yeah,
and
well
also
worth
from Gestalt. Sky Ogden, who I believe is one of the publishers or co-publisher with the Gestalt, based in Japan, he did a book called Vows, which is a silent book, which is pretty good. I think we might have mentioned that in Silent Comics.
Yeah, I believe so.
Episode
that
a while
came
ago.
Out a couple of years ago, I seem to recall.
So it starts off in 80 AD in the fall of Rome, and then we get a kind of a flashback to 66 AD, and there's this younger man in like this kind of crowded marketplace, and he spills wine on this grizzled old man who's none too happy about wine spillage on his tunic or whatever it would be called in those days. and they begin to talk, and the young man's quite a confident and quite a, you get the feeling that something's not quite right about this young fella.
Yep.
And Abraham seems quite we find out his name's Abraham. He's quite a morose individual. And then he tells the younger guy that he lost his girl, his daughter, his daughter, Chaya, C-H-A-Y-A, died. Then get a flashback, not saying how she's died, but that Abraham tries to resurrect her with the help of a priest.
Should never do.
No. Invoking dark forces is never a good sign.
Yeah.
And then we discover that, things don't end out the way that young Abraham was hoping. He then imprisons her, Abraham basically becomes immortal. He kind of he's cursed with immortality to kind of walk the earth and live forever with the consequences of basically trying to play God and, resurrect his daughter. So that's kind of it's interesting because I knew that this was coming. And in the Rumbies Zero, in the first one, the Zero issue, we don't really get an origin of where the zombies come from. It's just they're in the gladiator arena and then zombies start attacking people, whereas this one, it's actually an interesting take on things, like a spiritual take on zombies, like invoking the Hebrew
golem.
God and all that. Yeah, the golem.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing because I don't think that's been used, in zombies.
No.
Usually it's science or, that kind of stuff, that some kind of nuclear waste.
Voodoo curse is the other religious one, I guess, would be. Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
The closest analog to that.
And then we basically discover that the younger man is a bit of a priest or a pontiff, and he's not the kind of character. But it's interesting because Sky Ogden they've been running a competition on Facebook to have your likenesses in the comic. And as soon as I saw the pontiff, I knew that's based on Wolfgang, who's
the publisher.
The publisher of Gestalt. Yeah, it's a pretty good likeness. And then I was like, I wonder if that's And then I looked on Facebook, and yeah, it was. Yeah. So it's interesting. Looks like him.
Yeah, there's a couple of other little cameos of people, so I'm sure they'll be happy to see them. No, Chris is going, is that us? Like, no.
It looks vaguely like us.
No, I don't.
I'm not sure if it isn't. It's a really good comic, and a lot better than the Zero issue that came out. I think there's more pages to play with here. I think Robbie Zero is a couple of pages shorter. But just the pacing, there's the scene where his daughter Chaya comes back, kind of brings death with her, and just there's this full page panel where just death and destruction are caused.
Oh, right, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's just awesome.
Yeah. There's a couple of good splash panels here, and Sky Ogden.
The facial expressions are awesome, aren't they?
Yeah, his work I've been familiar with from Vals, and I was expecting a certain thing because I had seen Rombie Zero, and it's not so much the kind of comic and art I usually go for.
Yep.
And I thought he's put in a lot of detail in terms of the approach. He still has an abstraction sort of approach for the artwork, and it holds up really well. And there's an extreme close up of
the father.
Was it Abraham?
Yeah.
Yeah, Abraham's eyes. And there's just a nice little sort of cross-hatching technique, which is subtle, but it sort of holds up well from far away and close in. So it's kind of, Sky's worked up this technique, which I think is pretty effective. I mean,
the colouring is awesome as well. Just the tone and it's amazing how much mood colouring can just put on the page. He's not afraid to experiment with kind of similar panels. Like we see the back of Chaya's head and the mother's, you know, kind of look at happiness and then anguish.
Well, that's a digital thing that I've noticed a lot more with digital comics now is, and I'd say this is just a slight criticism, is, there's a bit of that, like just reusing panels and just shuffling the characters around in them slightly.
But I like that, and I think it works in this panel where, this page where...
Well, he mixes up certain elements of it so it doesn't just have the same panel twice.
That's right.
Yeah. But that's the trouble with, obviously, this isn't a huge production line thing. This isn't Marvel and DC.
No.
And it still works as a technique to... I can't imagine keeping to a monthly schedule as a single artist or...
Yeah.
He must be well underway.
Yeah, he's done everything himself here. So
So I think overall, as a first effort, I mean, this comic really sets up the series to come. So it's more like an origin, and it plays on all the tropes of like the kind of government character or whatever he is going to try and use this thing for like some sort of power, his own ends, and I wonder how that'll end.
It's kind of like aliens, you know, the military want to use the aliens for their own purposes.
And with zombie tales, there's an expectation of there has to be a certain attention to the tropes that people expect.
Yep.
And I think the spin on this is fresh enough, and I don't think I've seen this particular historical age, but it's I like that they've done a good job so far integrating kind of things of the
history.
Period.
It looks quite accurate, like the clothes and everything. It does look very... Like in the Old Testament days, the biblical times, it does look very much like that. Sky's obviously done his research, and there's a lot of great texture, detailed backgrounds. There's no skimping on detail here,
right?
Like when he's drinking in the marketplace to when he's in the temple, the crowd scenes, all that kind of stuff, which isn't easy to draw.
Mm.
It just seems it's quite a leap from the Zero issue to this. You know, it's rather astonishing.
Well, good signs for Gestalt, I'd say.
Definitely. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
So we don't know when this is coming out just yet, but if you see it in the previous catalogue or on the Gestalt Comics, Gestalt's publishing website, do yourself a favour.
Oh, you're doing that thing.
As Molly Meldrum would say. Any Aussie fans would be familiar with him. grab this baby because, it's a really interesting, great colour comic and such a great way to start a new series. So it seems to have a lot of life. Pun the pun, it's a zombie, but it seems to have a lot of life. Like, the story could really go anywhere, and thankfully the characters are interesting enough that it's not just mindless zombies wandering around killing people, that this kind of the entire tale is kind of hooked and grounded in real characters. You know, the kind of sleazy pontiff, and then the kind of anguished father.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems quite real, and Tom Taylor knows how to write good characters and knows how to keep you
engrossed,
which is very important. as a reader. So, yeah, thank you, Christophe, for sending us this. And if you do find it on the shelf or on their website, grab it.
All right, cool. That was our review of, Rombie's number one, Gestalt Publishing. Next week, Chris and I are going to be... The gloves come off.
I've got the absolute edition of Kingdom Come, which like weighs like 3.5 kilos or something.
I can imagine.
So I'm going to bring it in to your house just so we can flick through and do all on its pages.
Maybe we'll have to do a scene.
Yes, true.
Because I've already picked out certain quotes which support my argument. But
after reading the two superhero comics today, I realised how silly they can sound when you read them out of context, just like that, and especially when you put on your silly little voices.
Well, that's how they seem to me, especially because I don't have a lot of context for these characters, so when I pick up an issue and it's them talking about something, I'm like, oh, what's going on? Yeah, so next week, Chris and I, as I mentioned, will be arguing about the Alex Ross, Mark Waid Kingdom Come.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I also wanted to, maybe not next week, but in the next couple of weeks, I do want to talk about body image in comics. Now, this is probably a topic that you're like, oh, Aladdin...
Serious issues have no place. No, that's fine.
Yeah, especially, particularly in superhero comics. And maybe look at some of the different arguments we've heard.
You mean the body image of those who read superhero comics and how stupendous their bodies are?
How they perceive them? No. the presentation of men and women. Sex and sexism and all that stuff. I think it's a topic worth getting into.
It is, you are right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's one we'll be talking about, and that'll be one of our less silly episodes, I hope.
You never tell.
Anyway.
Thank you for listening to Extra Sequential, episode 36, in the last week of whatever month we're in.
April? Yeah. Oh, middle week, it's not last week. And then we have to do an episode where we review Thor, obviously.
Oh, yes.
And it has to come out before the Americans get a chance to see it, and we have to spoil the whole movie. So that'll be coming up in the next couple of weeks.
He takes his shirt off and he gets a hammer.
Hammer? What does Thor yell? Does he go, hammer something?
No. His hammer's called Mjolnir.
Mjolnir strike? Or what does he do?
I don't think he has a catch cry.
Really?
Nah.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, like Batman doesn't have a catch cry or anything.
Nah. This battering is for your face. No, it doesn't really.
For Martha and Thomas. Yeah. Anyway. Well, we should do catchphrases for all of them. Hey, what's your catchphrase?
Sweet Christmas from Luke Cage back in the 70s when he used to wear a metal tiara.
Oh, okay.
He used to say, sweet Christmas.
I thought that was your catchphrase.
No, I don't really have a catchphrase. But from... Why won't you go out with me? Maybe that's a catchphrase.
I'm so alone.
Is it because of my odour?
Is there anything in my long box? Anyway, that's enough.
All right, thanks for listening. You can get all our previous episodes at extrasequential.com.
Yep.
You can email us at Chris with a K. K as in... K as in Chris.
You're really struggling.
Chris at extrasequential.com. We're also on iTunes.
Could you not think of a single word that starts with K?
King, but that seems a bit...
King Chris?
Preposterous.
King Rat Chris.
Is he a Ninja Turtle bad guy?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah. King Rat. Anyway.
Give us your info.
You can check out music for the show at purgeaudit.com. And maybe we'll lead out on a snippet of the Batman Runway Show.
Batman Runway Show, yeah. I think Naomi Campbell's in it somehow.
It's you'll hear for yourselves, folks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
The only arena tour worth seeing this season is Joker Live. Once upon a time, she was Dr. Harlene Quinzel. After only a few sessions with me, Dr. Quinzel came to realize her full potential as the daffy and deadly Harley Quinn. The brilliant and beautiful Pamela Isley was once a very promising botanist, but...
We have got fantastic flying effects. Batman will fly 100 foot from way up in the air. He'll fly 100 foot down over the arena, and there's no way you can fake that. And that's one of the great advantages of working in an arena, is that you can have these huge effects, and they will seem like proper 3D, because they come out, and they come right past you.
All